Hey there, everybody. It is November 23rd, 2011, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken. As always, you can check us out by dropping us an email at thisshowissogay@aol.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun goings-ons with our dog and pony little gay show. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. Jam-packed show this week. It's continuing our trend with interviewing people in the same room. I'm not used to this guest.
Normally I just
call people up and I can do other things, but you're going to see if I do other things, so I got to pay attention. You ready?
I am ready.
Let me introduce you. John Scagliotti is an award-winning filmmaker, television producer. This is a long bio, so you need
I'm a little bit older.
You just hang out. Television producer and radio broadcaster, he created In the Life, the first gay and lesbian national series on PBS, now in its 20th. 20th, John.
Yes.
20th season.
My baby is a young man, a young woman.
And it's carried by more than 100 PBS stations. He was previously the news and public affairs director of WBCN-FM in Boston, no stranger to radio, I think, and was one of the pioneers in the multi-sound mix documentaries and received two major Armstrong Awards, which I'm told are the FM Oscars.
Yes.
You should go around and tell people I'm an Oscar winner.
Yes.
And then just say FM, but say it really quietly. With his late partner, the journalist Andrew Kupkine, John produced The Lavender Hour, the first gay and lesbian variety program on American commercial radio. In 1985, he released the documentary Before Stonewall, which was the first documentary concerning gay and lesbian issues ever to receive major funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Taxpayers' money.
We like that. The Republicans do not like that, John. After its national broadcast on PBS in December of 1986, the film went on to win two Emmy Awards, as well as many other awards. In 1999, I'm skipping ahead a little. Because we'll never have time to talk, John. In 1999, he released After Stonewall, the first documentary covering gay and lesbian history to premiere on prime time. In 2001, he made Oliver Button Is a Star, a documentary on gender differences in children. And in 2003, which is one of the things that brought me to Brattleboro, which I don't know that we've ever talked about, he released Dangerous Living, Coming Out in the Developing World, a film that covered the entrapment of 52 gay men on the Queen boat on the Nile River in Cairo. And it also chronicles the life and struggles of gays and lesbians in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. And then last year, he released Before Homosexuals, which covers same-sex expressions from ancient times to the beginning of the 20th century. He's done a ton of other stuff, but we'll never get to talk. So, John Scagliotti, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Oh, I feel so gay just listening to that intro.
Or should I say Dr. John Scagliotti.
Yes.
John
yes.
Scagliotti received an honorary doctorate of humane letters from Marlborough College last year.
I did. I was very proud of that. Well, not last year, last May.
Last May.
Yes, and it was very moving to receive such an award from a major university, having, you know, thought about the days when we were struggling to do anything and get some recognition, to the days of where a university would give me an honorary degree. It was quite amazing.
I will tell you, I have been to more commencements in my career than I possibly ever want to talk about. I really would put you up there as one of the most genuinely appreciative people for the honor that you received.
Well, I was.
It was palpable to everyone there.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
So, do you introduce yourself as doctor?
Not yet, but I hear, you know,
yes.
that I should.
Oh, without question.
Well, I might start doing that. I think I'll start tonight.
Look at that. That's right, because you'll be speaking at we're recording a little in advance, but you'll be speaking at Marlborough College.
Yes, it's my first time actually speaking there as a, you know, doing what I do rather than just receiving an award. So that's kind of fun to be at Marlborough College. But I speak at many universities throughout the country. It's one of my favorite things. It's a way of keeping, you know, my films and my work really do need to be, and my continued work really do need to be in touch with new generations
yeah.
of people. So it's important for me to get that input. I love showing an older film to younger people and hearing what they have to say about it, because it helps me in my work. So it's a really nice thing to be able to go to schools, and I actually go to high schools too. Things have changed enough where you can go to a high school.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. So, you know, it's important to have that, to have all those cross-generational things that you need to be able to do your work, because my work really is cross-generational. And, you know, it's not designed just for young people or older people. It's designed for everyone. So it's important to be able to meet a lot of young people.
What are you finding? I wasn't even planning on going this direction, but what are you finding is the kind of base level of knowledge of young people? Because I would tell you, and I almost hesitate to tell you this, in my travels in last month, I went to Baltimore, was hanging out with two close friends there, and mentioned your honorary degree, and I said, oh, he made Before Stonewall, and they didn't understand why Stonewall Jackson was gay, and I tried to explain to them, and very intelligent, two PhD folks in D.C., young gay men, no idea about Stonewall.
Well, you know, our history is very important. I think the reason why a lot of young people don't know about our history is not necessarily because they're not happy about being gay.
Right.
It's that, you know, the truth is being gay is still a marginal thing in America.
Yeah.
And it really, as much as young gay people seem to think it isn't, or that it's cool to be gay, it's not that cool to be gay.
Right.
You know, a lot of people think it's cool to be gay, but it's not. And the reality is that I'm finding a lot of young people are having some problems, and it's not as easy to adjust as people think, because we still live in a dominant straight culture.
Absolutely.
As long as you want to play out that straight role and not be acting out as gay, then you're pretty well accepted. And so therefore, the whole concept of identity has been lowered with a lot of younger people. But I think as time goes about, they're beginning to see that, wait a minute, maybe we should know about our history.
Right.
Maybe we should know about our identity. And yes, it could change. And yes, you can make fun of older gay people for liking Judy Garland, which seems to be the case. But there is some history there that's important to understand that's made you what you are today. And it's given you the ability to do the things that you can't do today. And that it could be wiped out and cleaned out very quickly.
Right.
I mean, we have seen, you know, I go back to the 30s and I think about when I do, I'm doing this film. It hasn't been released yet. I wish it had.
Oh.
But the early days of you think of all the great work that was done about homosexuality and gay and lesbian people. Well, they weren't called gay and lesbian people in 1890, but a lot of stuff was done, which was totally wiped out. And if it weren't people like Harry Hay and other people who went searching for it, it took a lot of courage to go and try to find the works, the real works of Oscar Wilde, the real, you know, what he was doing, why he was arrested. All this was sort of hidden. He was famous. He was a big scandal, but there are a lot of other stuff that was totally wiped out. People don't know about it. The first gay film was burnt by the Nazis in Germany, called Different from the Others. So what I'm saying is that there was a strong gay movement that was in effect in the 20s and 30s in Germany, for example, that was completely wiped out. So that people think that they don't need to know that our history is one that goes up and down, back and forth, it's very important to know that. And so what I realize when I go and talk to young people is that they're starting to realize, hey, wait a minute, you know, it's not as wonderful as we thought it was going to be, and there's something wrong.
Right.
They just know that there's a little bit something wrong. I can tell that they know there's something wrong. And it's easy to make fun of older people and old gay culture, because all they think of it is Judy Garland or drag queens or something like that. But our gay and lesbian history is very, very rich.
I wish, I've always said, I think I've said this probably way too many times, I wish there was just some way, okay, you just came out, automatically the fairy comes down and gives you the primer on here's the bulleted list of
books,
what you need to know,
films and things that are really important to have an identity. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why gay and lesbian people need to recognize that those of us who are older need to recognize that young people need some identity. They, you know, it's just not easy to say, oh, I'm kind of queer and that's it, and so are all my friends, and I don't need any sense of history. And without that, they will find that they'll be on their own at one point, and they're going to need something to keep them together.
I would say I don't see the intergenerational work happening as much as I would like to see it happening.
You know, it's true that a lot of young people are for gay marriage. Isn't that great? You know, but I have found that that when I go to places, once you've met a few gay people, and let's say you're on your own with them only, then you start hearing and feeling the differences. It's not so cool. It's not so wonderful to be in a totally cool environment. It might be cool environment, but it's still cool straight. It's still a heterosexual dominated environment, whether people like it or not. And they don't realize how easy that happens.
Right.
It's sort of like people are cool at, let's say, a college, Marlboro College, or one of these white cool colleges where they're not very racist. It's true. But at some point, they're not really, they don't really have a sense of identity of black culture.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, they don't understand how their white culture is dominating.
Right.
They just don't know until they, as an individual white person, are sent to a place, maybe an all black college down in Atlanta. You go to an all black college, you'd realize very quickly that you're a little bit out of your element.
Yeah.
You know, just a little bit. And while people wouldn't make you feel horrible there, you would feel that, oh, wait a minute, you know, there's a lot here that's going on that's not right on my radar. Right. And I think that's what it is, that culture really is more than just music, you know, it's history. It's your, you know, it's what people have done. And so therefore, black history is very important in our society to understand, for everyone to understand. And so therefore, if you are going to have, quote, black friends, you better know black culture. You better know black history, because it's only, and it's the same thing I would say to my straight friends. If they want to have gay friends, it's not just, oh, it's cool to have gay friends. They need to know culture.
Right.
They need to know history. They need to know who Barbara Giddings was and Frank Kameny and some of these historical figures and Harry Hay that people just don't know.
Right.
You know, and they need to know that.
Do you know, we actually talked about this on last week's show. I'm not sure if you heard this. There's a group of students here in Brattleboro, Vermont, at the high school who are trying to introduce the legislation that they passed in California to have gay history taught in the textbooks.
Well, there you go. Now, that's the kind of stuff that needs to be done.
Yeah.
So that people understand that culture is bigger than just what you're listening to the movies or liking, you know, everyone liking Lady Gaga. There's more to it than that, you know.
You're losing me listeners right this second by putting out that blasphemy. That's great, John. Thanks. Okay, I will argue that perhaps there is more than Lady Gaga. Go ahead.
Well, there is.
There's a ton more. There's a ton more. And when we talked for a few shows about Frank Kameny, we got emails from folks saying, that's not anyone I've ever heard of. Can you direct me to links where we can learn more
it's
about
important
him?
To know of his struggle and and what he did. And I just find it, you know, as people find this stuff, they have some sort of something to reach for their own heroes, support, and how they think. And then once they know this history, they start thinking a little differently, and that's important.
Yeah.
They start seeing the world a little differently. And they understand that the dominant cultures that they're part of are dominant. There's a reason why we say the dominant white male culture.
Right.
It is dominant. And you live in it every day, and you just don't realize it. You know, whether you're watching a advertisement on TV, it's only when there's an exception that you then say, oh, you know, if they were to show a gay couple in the middle of a, you know, a commercial about clothing, washing clothes or something like that, or detergent, then you would notice it. It's only when it's an exception that you notice it, and it becomes, oh my God, or interesting, but, you know, it's different. So dominant culture is something we hardly ever study. We always, you know, we always think that all these other cultures are, you know, going on their own, but people don't realize that they, without them, there would be nothing to intercede in this dominant culture. It would just be the way it is.
And to add more complexity, we could throw into the dominant mix the American piece, because you've certainly done quite a bit of work in looking at gay culture in other countries.
Yes, and the excitement of the culture. And I mean, that's another thing that people need to understand. I mean, just to find out the history of, I'm not talking about just American gay history, but, you know, the history of same-sex in Asia or in India, places like that, is really just fascinating, interesting to know, and interesting to see the differences. And that's what we're working on with this film that I'm working on right now mm-hmm. called Before Homosexuals, it's really actually goes back to Asia, Africa, places like that, and kind of, you know, looks at the period of time where, you know, there was a lot of fluidity.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see fluidity, everyone wants to talk about sexual fluidity today, but it was much different then, and therefore you need to understand a little bit of it to understand what you're talking about today if you want to talk about sexual fluidity.
I could say that I know I'm pretty darn knowledgeable about gay history in the U.S. I could tell you next to nothing about gay history in any other country.
In the Middle East, which is
fascinating. I couldn't even pull off England, except that I have some sense that the first gay bar was there. Other than that,
the first gay bar was in Amsterdam, wasn't it?
Do you know? Well, not in the presentation
sure.
I give, but that's not the point. But yeah, I can tell you next to, really, when I say next to nothing, it's just my way of not having to say nothing. I can tell you next to nothing about gay history in any other country.
Well, all that stuff is what's exciting about having an international LGBT community now, is that I myself am learning tremendous amount of stuff about, the Soviet Union, the whole world, where there is this history and kind of interesting things that took place. By discovering it, by bringing it forward, I think people will have a better sense of that life around the whole concept of Leviticus, that, you know, the Western Bible somehow is the defining moment, when you realize that there's so many other cultures, so many other worlds where sexuality was part of it, that you realize, oh, this is kind of silly.
Right.
You know, that we base so much on whether we're for or against what the Western Bible says.
Right.
You know, and to even have those arguments based on just these readings is kind of silly. Think about it when you think about the whole world. And that's what I try to do, is expand people's thinking to even be out of the box in terms of Western religion, which, you know, we can be for or against some of the principles that are in Western religion, but it doesn't matter. You've got to go further than that.
I sometimes can't get people to expand their horizons outside of Vermont. You're talking about, like, this whole other world out there. It's a little... It's a little overwhelming.
Well, the fact that gays and lesbians are involved in it is exciting. That's what I'm saying. And they're doing a lot of research and a lot of studies. I mean, I love, you know, what we're doing, you know, about the idea of lesbian love spells in 1 BC in Roman times. The idea that women could have lesbian love spells and is kind of exciting. And to just know that, and to know that all those love spells were put away in some museum and nobody really was interested in the lesbian ones. And then somebody like Bernadine Bruton, who is a MacArthur genius and a great professor, at least had enough money and grants and tenure to go and search it out and just go and say, I want to go back there and take a look at some of these old love spells, and realize that there were women who were doing them to other women. That, to me, is kind of interesting stuff that people need to know.
How do you even put parameters on a project like this?
It's very difficult. It's part of my life.
I mean, I would just imagine things keep popping up, and you're like, oh, well, we got to add that one in.
You were reading my resume there, or whatever it's called, my...
your bio.
My bio. And I realized that it is a body of work. It's not necessarily one particular thing, and that's the only way I can deal with it. That, you know, sooner or later I'll do that, and then I'll do something else. You know,
hold on though. If you're creating a work called a project called Before Homosexuals,
yes,
point I would imagine you have to say, all right, we got to stop. We have so much.
I know.
Stuff.
It's been 3 years now, and I can't stop. It's very difficult. Maybe I need you to come.
I know. Well, look, according to my bio, you released it last year. This thing is done. This thing is in the can. So, yes, you could use me to come in and just say, Ken read the bio. We're done, folks.
There's so much wonderful stuff, and you're absolutely right. Maybe I'll put it in beyond Stonewall, which is going to be a whole film about identity and the younger people who are, you know, saying that, you know, we don't really need identity nowadays. I really want to look into that, too, and that's going to be another film I'm going to be doing.
Wow. What was the one that I saw this summer? Did I see one this summer?
Who
at
knows?
The barn that had Stonewall in the title, but wasn't yours, but was someone else's.
Oh, Stonewall Uprising.
Stonewall Uprising.
The only film that out of the trilogy that I didn't want to do, which was just about the riots. I did before Stonewall, I did after the riots, before the riots, I'm doing way ancient history, I'm doing international, but I've never done the riots. In fact, they came to me and said, would you like to do that film? And I said, no, I'm not really interested so much in the riots themselves. I'm much more interested in what happened after the riots or
before, after,
or way before. But, you know, the riots themselves, I think, were very important. I mean, I think it's important, but I thought other people could do it.
Yeah. But I wanted to talk a little bit about, not that movie, I want to talk about the way that you do use your homestead. I call it a homestead. I don't know how you refer to it.
My farm.
Your farm. Your farm is not just a place where you live. Your farm is really a creative colony for people. What a great time. Let me just say thank you so much for having us over. I had a great time watching a movie in the barn and seeing people that I never have seen in this area. And then all these people kept saying, oh, you're from Bear Weekend. No, I'm not. I have no idea what you're talking about. But thank you so much for having us here. And it was lovely.
We do a lot of things with the farm. Yeah. It is a space that Andy Kopkind and I got. And he started it many, many years ago when he was an editor at The Nation magazine. And there were a lot of young people there, mm-hmm. interns and stuff like that. And he would have a lot of people up over in the summers. You know, we would just have people up, and there were a lot of young people. But he also had a lot of contemporaries. So it was kind of an intergenerational kind of aspect amongst writers and progressive writers. And you'd have a Frankie Fitzgerald, who was a pretty important writer, with a young intern, you know, having just discussions and no one really being in this hierarchy of just being able to share ideas. And so we thought after Andy died that we'd start a foundation called the Kopkind Foundation that sort of developed that spirit, that brought in people so that we could have these sort of intergenerational moments of mentors, people who've been writing a long time, and then young people who are just starting to write. Or the same thing in film. We have a lot of people who are making films. And then we started doing some festivals. We now do a gay and lesbian film shorts festival here in Vermont, because there wasn't one. And it was part of Gay Pride, and it was great. And we added it to the farm events. So we do, you know, lots of shorts, and which people can come to. We started doing an activist documentary week, and so we end that with a couple of great films. We're bringing Yoruba Richin next year, who is finishing up a documentary on The New Black, which is about the history of sort of black communities and how they've had to deal with gay and lesbian folks in that history, and that should be a fascinating film. So, she was part of our workshops on, so we got to see her films and help her, and help her get some funding too, and networking, so that she could complete this film. So we've been doing a lot of work like that. And then we have the Bear Film Festival, which is films about bears, and, you know, it's a subculture of the gay male community, and that's very popular, and a lot of great films are made from it, and I have a network of
filmmakers. I don't think I've seen even one.
Well, we have a Bear Shorts that you could purchase on www.afterstonewall.com.
That's
and go to
where
our store,
we will go.
And you can see all my films, and including this new Bear Films, which is shorts. They're a lot of fun.
Okay.
Some of these filmmakers are very good. I mean, they're like art filmmakers who then play out their thinking in terms of bears. And so, you know, we have a great film by Clark Nicolai called A Lord Cockworthy. But it's, you know, you look at it and it's really some interesting filmmaking. You know, it's, at first it sounds funny, but when you see it, you start saying, oh my God, this is blowing my brain away.
I was thinking, what am I going to do this weekend? Now I know I'm going to watch a bear film. That's what I'm going to, now, but I would have to imagine that there have been certain points where you said, okay, everybody, I got to go to bed. You all need to go home. I mean, that line between this place where you live and this colony that you created must be fascinating.
It's a big space. Thank goodness. And there are so many people who help. I mean, it's not me. And, you know, we've developed this where so many organizations are part of it, like the Friends of Music. We have a large, what I call, tangle Bush.
Nice.
Which is like 500 musicians. Nice. It's a small version of Tanglewood. But it's done by the Friends of Music who've been here for 45 years with their organ, and we have some great concerts. But it's well established, and so therefore I don't, you know, have to do all the work. Put it that way.
Right.
There are a lot of people doing some great work and are partnering with me and this space, because it's a lovely space in Vermont. And I like having, I mean, I would go crazy if I didn't have, you know, young filmmakers from Oakland visiting me.
Oh, with different perspectives, I would imagine, coming in every year.
Yes. So we get this sense of a variety and diversity.
Yeah.
But we add to it to increase the diversity. And it keeps me from going crazy.
Now, if I liked boats, which I don't, but other people seem to like boats.
Yeah.
And they like going on boats. And
we've added a venue to that boat. That's what we've done. It makes so we don't have to work so hard. Remember you said you got to get away and go to sleep?
Yes.
Well, I thought, where could you do
Where could you do this?
Where could you keep, you know, young filmmakers in a cabin, have them fed, and not do it?
Right.
Because when we have young filmmakers at the farm, we end up having to feed them.
Right.
We end up making sure that their sheets are clean. And
transportation to a nearby town.
All that.
But Pride of the Ocean,
so
you
we
have
were
that.
Able to add one more venue and put it on a ship. And this way, we still do our programming. But, you know, we have our seminars. We have screenings. They have a beautiful theater. But when it comes to eating, when it comes to, you know, all these other things that you need to do to keep nurture the soul, it's a little help. So this is what we do. We do a thing called Pride of the Ocean, and you can find out more about it by going to prideoftheocean.com.
Great.
And we run a gay and lesbian seminar on it for young filmmakers who apply and get scholarship and can come for free. And so it's, it makes it a little bit easier, but you know, it does deal a little bit with this. You know, we just didn't have enough room for the summer,
right?
And I needed to get away.
To get away. Where does the boat go?
It goes to from New York to Bermuda.
Lovely.
And Bermuda is lovely. It's just wonderful.
No. I don't do boats,
but the Bermuda is lovely.
Oh, I should go there. No,
yes.
I've not been there.
It's beautiful. It has pink beaches.
Huh.
Yes, it's beautiful.
Now, have you done this before?
Yes, this is our third.
This is your third one?
Yes, in June. We do it for a week and for Pride Week.
And it's a lot of fun. I totally want to go.
And some really interesting filmmakers. And
investor networking.
We do a little bit of everything. There's people who support films, who give money to films. It allows us to, you know, because at the farm, it's kind of low down.
I mean, right,
you
right.
You can't bring your donors to the
right.
farm. But you can't bring your donors to this. You can bring people who give money and support filmmakers and young, especially young filmmakers, so that this stuff can be made. I don't know if you've not so much Bear Films, but, you know, there are a lot of young filmmakers out there making really interesting stuff, like Yoruba was was in there, and she got a big grant from Tribeca, the Tribeca film people were there on the ship, and so she got to network with them. They saw her work. So, you know, we can bring in people on the ship that we would have a tough time bringing here, such as donors, such as grantors, what are called grantors, you know, people who support the arts and LGBT film arts. So this is a good way in which we can bring some of these people together.
This is fantastic. Now, what use do you have for me on this boat?
Well, you can do your radio show.
I could do my radio show on the boat. Is there a karaoke night for me to host? What do you want me to do here?
Yes, there's definitely lots of things.
I'm open to it. Well, I have to tell you, we have been doing this show for over 3 years now. This is the first guest interview. We've had a couple hundred guests over the past 3 years. This is the first guest interview where I have not gotten to one of the questions that I had written down for the guest, which I feel is the mark of a successful interview. So you need to agree. I wanted to talk about Melissa Etheridge and about all these people. You're a fellow NYU Violet, just like me.
Oh, I didn't realize.
And you look at all these people that you were at NYU with, Ang Lee and Spike Lee, and so we were going to talk about sissies. No, we're not getting to any of that
stuff. Well, we'll have to come back and do some
more. Can you come back?
I can.
Dr. John Scagliotti, I mean, you have to know. I was watching it actually at PBS. What was I watching on PBS the other day? I'm sure I was watching In the Life. That they were doing much more of a retrospective about, yeah. is there, right now, there yeah. must be a 20-year...
20th anniversary.
It,
yes.
It,
I think I was on it.
You are on it. You are on it. I was looking at my television, and Dr. John Scaglietti, I'm going to keep calling you that, and it's going to catch on. You say, he's right on my television right there. It's almost, it doesn't make for good radio for me to say it's indescribable, but it's almost indescribable.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey.
The impact that that show yeah. has had, and just what it has chronicled, and what mm-hmm. you have chronicled through your films, and you're not done. You got a lot more to go. At some point, you need to finish the film you're working on right now, yeah. but I'm going to help you with that.
Okay.
We're going to put some boundaries.
Well, you know,
place.
I kind of liked it. Felt good when you said, and just released.
It's done.
You know, I said, well, why don't we just say it's done? I mean, there's so much there anyway that it's wonderful. It's just that I keep running into new things.
Yeah.
And I keep going, oh, I got to go to, you know, Japan.
I was thinking as we were talking, I'm going to go back and edit that part out, but I'm going to leave it in because it's going to be inspiration to you when I said, and then last year he released Before Homosexuals. So you're going to just, we'll put that on a loop for you.
Okay.
You can play it back. Dr. John Scagliati, a pleasure having you on the
well,
show.
Thank you, Kenneth.
Keep doing what you do.
Viola, I swear.
Hi, Jody.
Hi, Ken.
Jody's here. Gobble, gobble, Jody.
Gobble, gobble.
As in, happy Thanksgiving
to
you.
I thought you were telling me to gobble.
I don't don't even know what that means in the context of this show.
I don't know.
Okay, so Jody is now, this is the segment that we like to call Gay Things That Jody Is Thankful for Thanksgiving. It's a new segment. It just started. So three things that you are thankful for,
gay things.
This Thanksgiving, gay-related, LGBT-related, somehow gay
okay.
for Thanksgiving.
Well, I'm very thankful, because I just read this on Facebook, that Deval Patrick just signed the trans rights bill in
yes.
Massachusetts.
And we talked about that last week on our very special Trans Day of Remembrance episode. So that's great.
That's, I'm very thankful.
That's number one. Number two.
Gay-related
things you're thankful for.
I'm thankful for. I am thankful that recently I got to see Girly Man twice.
Wow, we love Girly Man.
Yes.
We'll play some Girly Man on tonight's show. That'll be our song at the end.
As well as getting to see them perform with Coyote Grace.
Who you like.
Who I really like.
Now, are they gay-related?
Very.
All right, so maybe we'll play some Coyote Grace as well.
Yes.
Okay, we will play Coyote Grace as well.
Great.
Okay. Excellent. And so number three, gay-related things in your life that you're thankful for.
Okay. I'm really thankful for my marriage.
There you go! That
Yay!
Was the correct answer.
It's funny that I don't think of that always as gay-related.
Oh,
more,
it is. No, it's a same-sex relationship.
I realize that.
Okay.
I just think of it as my marriage.
Oh.
So, of course I'm thankful
It's your
for
gay
that.
Marriage.
I don't usually introduce it that way. I don't say, hey, this is my gay married wife.
The weird thing is that's how I introduce her.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You say, this is Jody's gay married wife?
No, I just say, this is Jen, my gay married wife.
Your gay married wife?
I know, it's weird.
That is weird.
She gives me looks as well.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was the correct answer, your gay married wife. I'm thankful for, all the fun people we've talked to on the show this year,
gay
related.
Yes.
And I'm thankful that, Jen, my gay married wife, was not deported. I think that's a good thing. And she's on her way to getting citizenship. And that's good. That's real. Don't you think that's good?
Yeah.
And I am thankful, and this is very recent, but I'm very thankful for Elliot Anders, who we work with here at the Marlboro College, because he retooled our website in the most amazing way. And I love it. And it's got all these really great links and stuff. So Elliot Anders, this show is so gay, is thankful to you. So that's what's
awesome.
Going on.
It's
all right. Tons of news to talk about, including more segments. There'll be a segment. I can't even tell you what the name of it is, but it's going to be.
Surprise!
It's going to be really funny. A quick trans story that makes us happy.
Okay.
In a move predicted by one advocate to become the gold standard for LGBT health, Google. Do you use the Google?
All the time.
Google has significantly increased coverage of transgender healthcare for its U.S. employees, and other companies are expected to follow suit. The updated benefits, announced internally by company officials last Friday but effective immediately, cover transitioning procedures and treatment in accordance with the World Professional Association for Transgender Health's Standards of Care. So that's pretty good.
That's really awesome.
We hope that follows suit quite a bit.
Yeah.
So a lot of linkages between being gay and some really funny things.
Okay. Being gay is hilarious.
This is hilarious. So first we go to the Switzerland.
The
Switzerland, where a Swiss politician has likened gay adoption to legalizing cocaine.
Wow! Because I totally associate those two things.
The article, just because a number of gay people already parent children does not mean the law should be changed to facilitate adoption by couples, says a leading Swiss politician who compared the issue to legalizing cocaine. According to English language Swiss news source The Local, Christophe Debaye, I'm sure I mangled that, leader of the center-right Christian Democrats, made his... See, right there in Switzerland, they actually call them Christian Democrats. They put it right there in the title.
Well, because it's a whole party.
It's a whole party.
Yeah.
He made his comments last week in response to a vote in the legal committee of the Council of States, the upper house of parliament, to change the law to make it easier for same-sex couples to adopt. Currently, single gays and lesbians can adopt children, but same-sex couples cannot adopt, which is just...
That's weird.
It's just crazy. And neither can a same-sex partner adopt the other's biological child. And he said, I wouldn't suddenly legalize cocaine just because 500,000 people consume it. So there's that. This is like our international segment. So that's going on in the Switzerland. In Peru... Do you know what happens if you have a stroke in Peru?
Probably the same thing that happens here.
Which is?
Which is, you might turn gay.
Not
all
might.
Of a sudden.
You,
oh, you
will.
Will
turn gay.
Will.
So not only, as we covered a few weeks back, might a stroke turn you gay, but so too might the tap water in Peru.
Wow.
In one of the most unusual claims about homosexuality to emerge in some time, a Peruvian mayor is blaming the high mineral levels in the area's drinking water for a perceived increase in the number of gay men residing in his town. As Pink News is reporting, Harame Mayor Jose Benitez made the bizarre comments at the launch of a local water access project where he noted high levels of strontium in the tap water. The drinking water comes from Tabalosos. It comes from a town.
A town that begins with a T.
Which a Lima-based television station once claimed was inhabited by 14,000 gay men. And this was his quote, this mayor. Unfortunately, strontium reduces male hormones and suddenly will be as other towns where the percentage are increasing of homosexuality. Young people have low self-esteem by this stigma. My favorite part about that is it's not just that the tap water is making people gay, but that the next sentence without transition is young people have low self-esteem by this stigma, which I think is a call to action to find out. This is all sponsored by Brita. This is all sponsored by the, and by the way, if Brita does want to sponsor this show, it's okay. We won't turn that down. I suspect, though, due to my earlier comments about Brita sponsoring an anti-gay tap water initiative in Peru, we probably won't get that sponsorship. But I'm holding out hope. Well, I'm holding out hope that that might happen.
You never know.
Next week's show brought to you by Brita. I'm a big proponent that if you say it, it makes it true. Now, so there's that. And then this is the best one. And this brings us to our new segment called, Which Inanimate Object Would Jody Like to Marry?
Oh, my God.
I'll set it up for you. Michelle Bachmann. Do you know the Bachmann?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Tamara Scott is Michelle Bachmann's Iowa campaign co-chair. Mm. She's warned that gay marriage could lead people to marrying objects like the Eiffel Tower.
Oh, wow.
There's just so much to play with there. I don't even...
Wow.
I mean, because it's not just objects.
Right.
It's objects like the Eiffel Tower.
Like the Eiffel Tower. So the Leaning Tower of Pisa?
We're going to get there, because I think you've already provided, obviously, your answer to which national monument you, Jody, might marry.
Right.
So this is Tamara Scott. She's Michelle Bachmann's new Iowa campaign co-chair. She is warning that women might start marrying the Eiffel Tower. In a new video, this woman, Tamara Scott, she also serves as the director of Iowa's Concerned Women for America. They're concerned, and they're women.
Yes.
And they're very much for America.
Okay.
She, in this video, she was with Bob Vander Plaats, who's the head of the family leader, and the two speculate in this that polyamory and objective sexualism will run rampant if gay marriage becomes legal, or in Iowa if it stays legal, and women might start marrying the Eiffel Tower after they go to Peru and drink the water and consume babies. I think it's important to connect these stories. So, this is the new segment that everybody has been waiting for called Which National Monument Would Jody Marry?
It means.
And by the way, I want rationale.
Okay.
I want this to be a very well. I mean, we've been prepping for this segment for at least 45 seconds now.
Multiple seconds.
I want this to be well thought out. I want it to be reflective of your personality, who you are as a woman.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Who you are as a lesbian.
Yeah.
And as someone who's in a gay marriage.
Right.
So.
Yes.
Which national monument would Jody marry?
Right. Well, since I'm already in a marriage, it needs to be something that that my wife and I would agree on.
Okay.
So
you would consult first.
We would, yes.
Okay.
Yes,
that's very democratic of you.
Yes. So, one of the things we would probably consider, would be something food oriented.
Okay.
We really like food.
Okay.
So something that stands for excellence in food. Yeah.
Is something coming to mind?
No, see, I'm kind of like brainstorming. So okay. What does stand for excellence in food? Well, there are places that have excellent food, so that would probably be.
Okay, but we're talking likely... a monument. It's got to be an inanimate object.
Because
I think that if people are going to make this claim
that
we as gays might marry a monument
or
a symbol.
Right.
Then... Oh, get it? Symbol.
Yeah, huh?
Look at that. Symbol.
Symbol.
Then I think it behooves us to tell those people, yes, we might do that, and we've thought it through.
It's
not just something that we would willy-nilly. Like, I just think it's really unfair. I think it's fine for her to suggest that we marry a national monument. I think it's unfair for her just to flippantly throw out the Eiffel Tower.
Right.
Because I would like to give more thought to it, because there might be other ones that I choose.
Well, yeah.
So, okay, so you've got food.
Yeah,
and,
food.
Okay.
But also, you know, going with national monument, maybe we go for something that's just more beautiful.
Okay.
Really beautiful, fills us with joy. Because, you know, this is a long-term relationship we're having here.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think... I know Yellowstone National Park is a national park, not a monument.
Okay, but you might marry...
But I think it might be...
That's where the Grand Canyon is.
Yeah, it's in that area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe
is
the
it,
Grand
by the way,
Canyon. Yeah, it's
okay,
nearby.
That's great.
It's not terribly far. Yeah, you can kind
of... It's on that other side of the country.
It's on the other side of
the country. So you might
marry
the Grand Canyon.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
I can't... Even as someone who does comedy... Mm-hmm. I can't even take that where it should go. So we're going to pause in the show right now to let people reflect on why Jody might marry the Grand Canyon. Okay, so moving on. I'm really uncomfortable right now, and it's also going to be in the description for this week's show, why Jody might marry the Grand Canyon. I would marry either the Parthenon.
Oh.
Yes. Mm. Or those heads on Easter Island.
Oh, all of them?
Yeah, well, it's polyamory, I assume, is what they're accusing gay marriage people of doing, the gay marrieds. So yes, I would have to say so. So that's what I would choose. Mm-hmm. So if you want to let us know, listeners, which national monument, it's going to be a new poll that we're setting up.
Yeah.
We don't even have a poll function on the website, but we'll get one.
Yeah.
We would love to know which inanimate object you might marry. That's also a national monument. And send us an email. There are options now. You can send us
an email
at thisshowissogay@aol.com, but this is the last week we're going to say that, because from now on, you can send us an email at ken@thisshowissogay.com or jody@thisshowissogay.com. It's very exciting. Are you excited
I'm
about your
really
new email
excited.
Address?
Yeah, it's very,
very
exciting.
Very exciting. So I'm going to move on from the national monument.
Okay,
you feel like you've thought that through? I think the important thing is you would clearly establish that you do need to talk to your gay marriage partner. And so you'll get back to us.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because this should be an ongoing segment.
Definitely.
In the world of sports, which I assume this is pre-stroke, just listen to a show from a few weeks ago. That's what we're talking about.
Yep.
Major League Baseball took a major step yesterday to help any closeted gay player if he chooses to come out while still active on the field.
Oh, wow.
Major League Baseball announced that its new collective bargaining agreement will prohibit discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. The NFL made the same change in September. So far, no active Major League Baseball player or coach is out. Which I just, you know, okay. I can't believe that, even though it's true.
Right.
It's not just that I don't accept that. It's more because now I go straight to tennis, and I still can't believe that there is not a male professional tennis player who is out.
Yeah.
And that, me saying that, me expressing more incredulity that that's happening in tennis than other sports is subscribing to a horrible stereotype that I'm admitting right now, and that, the others are team sports, and that's going to be so much more tough. And that's a stereotype, and that's not necessarily true.
Right.
That said, in an individual sport, I just don't get it. It's impossible that there is not a gay male in the top 300 tennis players in the world. That is not possible. And yet, individual sport...
I know.
I just don't get it.
I
don't get it. So over and so that's going on in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
Are you going to watch more baseball now? Me neither.
No.
So over in the world of bullying, a couple mixed stories. You had, did you see, on the one hand, the guy who murdered Lawrence King, who I actually dedicated my dissertation to, was given 21 years for that murder. And that was this week. And he's something like 18 or 19 years old. Not much at all. Yeah. And then on the other side, Jamie Rodemeyer, who he, it was a lot. This is one of those stories that got a ton of attention when he killed himself. His mm-hmm. bulliers are not going to face any charges. So it's just to say that people from state to state are not sure what
yeah,
they're going
to
do.
They don't know what to do with it.
So I do need to issue a correction to a show that you and I did together.
Oh.
Because it's not so much a correction as much as we should provide a little bit more information.
Okay.
And we have such great listeners, in particular, the Valley Free Radio down in Northampton, people mm-hmm. who write in and say, oh, I'm listening, and that was totally wrong, what you just said. So Alex Morse, remember, it was the story was that Alex Morse was elected to office in Holyoke.
Yes, yes, yes.
But the story didn't say what he was elected to.
Right.
He was elected. Have you heard this since? Have
no,
we talked about this?
No,
oh,
no.
He, Alex Morse, was elected to be the mayor of Holyoke.
Oh, wow.
Alex Morse, 22 years old.
Wow.
I just met him on Friday night. We were at the same event. He's going to be on the show in December.
That's awesome.
So we're going to be talking. I'm going to actually go down to Holyoke and interview him down there. It's this new thing where we interview people in person. It freaks me out.
It's weird.
It freaks me out.
You're on the road, man.
I know. I know. So he's fantastic, and he was elected, and it became national headlines for a couple different reasons. Not mostly, but because of the confluence of him being 22. And he's definitely like, he's 22.
Yeah.
And being gay. And so then CBS did a story on him, but CBS didn't at all mention that he was gay. And then people got upset because they said, wait a second, how did that not get coverage? Mm. But isn't it good that that didn't get coverage? Because that doesn't actually have to be the headline every time someone is elected.
Right.
So I met him on, I met him last Friday night. Mm-hmm. Seems lovely. So excited to do a good job. Not a small place, the Holyoke.
No, it's big.
Yeah.
And it's,
and he's got his work cut out for him.
Yeah.
They got some issues down there
they
in the Holyoke.
Really do.
Yeah. So where he's going to be on the show, he's going to be on the show in a few weeks. And that'll be exciting. And
that's very exciting.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
And tons of other people are going to be on the show. We did a whole booking extravaganza.
Extravaganza.
That's how you say it. Extravaganza. Including, now I know you were not a big sitcom watcher.
No.
I don't understand. What did you do growing up?
Well, actually, that's the growing up. Yes, I did.
Okay.
Growing up, I watched the TV.
So the Facts of Life was not one of your sitcoms growing up?
A little bit, but not.
Because that's definitely more your generation than my generation.
Yeah, I watched other stuff.
I thought
that was
a funny joke. You didn't even get it. We're of the same generation. the Facts of Life. Cousin Jerry, who was one of my favorite characters on the Facts of Life. Jerry Jewell, who is in the Out 100. Out Magazine just released their 100 most influential LGBT folks in culture in this past year.
Okay.
And so Jerry Jewell, comedian Jerry Jewell, who wrote a book and she's an actress, she's going to be on the show to talk about the intersection between comedy and disability and all these great things that she does. So that's going to be really exciting. And tons of fun people coming up. Anything else, Gay, that you want to talk about? Do you know that actually already brings us to the end of this week's show?
Oh,
that's how quick that was.
Wow.
I know. And there's no other really major stories that need to be covered because it's Thanksgiving and everybody's kind of on hiatus. But again, with the bullying, people should read those stories because it's very different verdicts and courses of action.
Yeah,
depending on where it is.
Right.
I will say that there's this new organization, or I guess they have a new logo at this organization called the National Rebirth of Poland. And I can show you, they have this new logo, the National Rebirth. So folks should look that up because it's pretty offensive. And that's what I'm going to leave you with for Thanksgiving. Sorry, I know, it's not good. Anyway, but we wish everybody a very happy Thanksgiving.
Definitely.
Have the most, what do we wish for people?
We wish that they are with people that they love. And eat excellent food.
Yeah.
And have an unstressful time.
Right. So what we are saying is absolutely come out during Thanksgiving dinner. That's right. I mean, that's many people say that is the time to do it. It's really the tryptophan.
Like the Home for the Holidays movie.
I didn't see that movie.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We need to do a movie night.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
That's that movie.
So no, we, in all seriousness, I should say, because we are big advocates of coming out both when you are ready and when it is emotionally and financially safe for you to do so. So
yes.
Don't do that over Thanksgiving dinner. If you do, write us an email because we want to know how it went. go out there, go have a great and thankful couple of days and year ahead. Go out there, go do some amazing things, everybody. And while you're doing those amazing things and while you are thankful, just as we are thankful to you, why be gay when you can be so, so gay?
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. I was a watercolor girl in a tin type town. The vocals took me up and down. Loved to watch the head spin when we come around. Me and my sweet baby. She was a tall. A dandelion brain, oh, this barefoot queen and a flat.